Gimel Amud Beis 3b, but I wanted to just answer a question that that was asked last week, because I didn't at the time think that we were ready for the source that deals with the question, but then I realized that actually we've done enough in order to be able to see it. So just again to remind people of where we are, we had seen that the wedding of a Besula is supposed to be on Wednesday. We said there may be grounds to move it to Tuesday out of fear of a Roman officer who is going to have his way with the bride. And then we said there's even grounds to move it to Monday. And we wanted to know, what are the grounds to move it to Monday? We really don't like that idea. And the third answer that the Gemara gave, which seems to be the one that sticks, is that we're talking about where, Rachmana Litzlan, the parent of either the Chasan or the Kala, the groom or the bride, passes away at the time of the wedding, when they're about to do the wedding. And so that there is a need to have the chuppah before the burial, and so do the chuppah, even though it's Monday. And that was the initial discussion. We actually got on to Dalet Amud Aleph. We got on to 4a. With that, what we said was, we have them do the chuppah. They do be'ilas mitzvah. They consummate the marriage. And then, after that, they separate. You have the funeral, as Rashi noted. And then the week of Sheva Brachos, followed by the week of Sheva. And we discussed the question of whether the funeral is actually the same day the person died. There would be an advantage in pushing it off a day, because then mourning is rabbinic, and it's easier to push off mourning for the week of Sheva Brachos. But we said, the Rishonim say, no, that's not the way it works. The funeral and everything is done the day that the person passed away, and yet we're able to push off biblical avelus, biblical mourning. We said because the Chachamim have the ability to push off a biblical practice by saying don't do, and that led to a question about Yom Tov Sheni and why we don't do the same thing if there's a burial on Yom Tov Sheni. I'm not going back into that, but one question that I think it was Chuck had asked. And I should actually note, sorry, we actually have one more dedication. Someone had emailed me, Harry Canner, who some of you may remember is a Torontonian from the Clanton Park area. Lives in the U.S. now, but wanted to dedicate the shiur this evening in memory of his mother, Ilona Canner, whose yard site was on the 14th of Cheshvan. Forgot to mention that. But the question that Chuck asked last week is it a requirement for the Chasan and Kala to consummate the marriage at this point? In other words, what if they say, you know, they're dealing with this death, they're not in the mood to do this, is there any requirement that they should actually do this? And the Shita Mekubetz, as I mentioned last week, says that it actually is a requirement. And I thought initially that we weren't actually up to that, so to speak, that there was another piece we needed in the Gemara, but then I realized that it's not so. So I realized it after I'd already sent out the source sheet, so I did not put this on the sheet. But I have it here. And I'm just going to blow it up a little bit so that it is easier for people to view. He brings this in the name of the Rashba, although it's not in the edition of the Rashba that we have on the Gemara. If you see where I have it here, yeah. If you see where the arrow is, Virashi Zal Kasaf, can people see that? Okay. Virashi Zal Kasaf, Vizelashono, Uporesh. He quotes you Rashi. Rashi said that they then separate after having lived together. Vyikbru as Hames Miyad. And they do the burial right away. The Kevan Dechala Alav Chatuna, Habila Gabe Keregel. Since the chuppah has actually taken effect, therefore it's like a yom tov. V'lo asya avelus v'chayil v'noeg zayin yemei mishta, and therefore avelus does not begin, and therefore the 7 days of sheva brachos kick in. So he says perish lepirusho, explaining Rashi again the name of the Rashba, da'al karchach tzarech livol be'ilas mitzvah. That there's actually an obligation for them to have relations. Ki hechi delechol alecha tuna, v'laheve gabe keregel. Such that that will generate the status of regel, of Yom Tov for this week. Without it, it doesn't work. De'bahachnasas chuppah levad lo sagi l'mashviyei keregel. Just having chuppah isn't enough to create the status of a Yom Tov for them. That's the rule. It won't be Yom Tov sufficient to knock out the mourning that's supposed to go on the day of the death and burial. That's why we require that they actually have relations. And he says, has to be so. You have to take that position. Because he says otherwise, and I'm just going to say it outside of it, but you can see the Shita Mekubet says here, he says if you were not to say that, then that would mean that they had a chuppah which was not suitable for bia, not suitable for, I should say, for yichud, for them to be alone together. And this was the part that I thought we might not be ready for. What the Gemara is going to tell us is that if a bride and groom have not yet consummated the marriage and they become prohibited to each other, then they're not allowed to be alone together. So if this bride and groom isn't going to consummate the marriage, then they're already not supposed to be alone together from now. And he says, what kind of chuppah is that? That's ineffective as a chuppah. Because one of the ways that chuppah may be understood is that the two are isolated together under the chuppah. Granted that today you have the parents on both sides, and you have the siblings, and you have the MC, and you have the videographer, and you have somebody playing a trombone, and who knows what, all up there under the chuppah. Nonetheless, we're going to pretend they're alone. Originally, chuppah was supposed to be them being alone. Oh, I forgot, the Masada Kiddushin is up there also. You had the rabbi up there too. Nonetheless, and the caterer, because he has to hand a cup of wine. But we consider it to be a state of being alone together up there. And he says, if they're not supposed to be alone together, then it's not going to be a valid chuppah in the first place. So he says, they actually are supposed to have relations, as hard as it is to imagine them wanting to do this. Nonetheless, that's the way that the Shita Mekubetzes understands this. He then moves on within this to address another point that someone asked about last week, and I don't remember anymore who asked it. But he says, you might think, and I'm gonna stop the share in order to be able to see everybody. He says, you might make the argument that since you're telling me that on the day of the death of the parent, of the chassan or the kala, they are going to have relations with each other before the funeral, that would seem to indicate that an onain is allowed to have relations. That would seem to be indicated. Someone asked this last week. Was it Maury? Was it you? Maury from New Jersey. Not Maury from Toronto.
He asked the question about Genevans, yes.
Okay, so it was you. So you asked that question, but you asked about their status as an onain. So the Shita Mekubetzes speaks to your point. He says, don't conclude from the fact that we say they can have relations that means an onain in general is able to have relations, because he says, number one, here it's a special heter, because you need to enable them to not lose the wedding meal. So therefore, it's a unique situation. Don't conclude from here that can happen in general. But also, number two, he says they're not really onim anyway. And that goes back to what you had asked. He says, since the idea of an onain is that somebody is involved in the burial, and therefore they're not obligated in various other mitzvot because they're taking care of that. And in this case, the Chachamim are actually saying, don't do the burial. They're saying specifically, we don't want them to do the burial. So therefore, therefore he's not an onain in the first place, or she's not an onain. It's really going to be him, as we'll see in the Gemara later on. We're really talking about where he would be the avel. But either way, the point is that they're not really onanim, and therefore the Shita Mekubetzes says, don't extrapolate from this. An onain in general is not allowed to have relations. That's the Shita Mekubetzes. So it addresses the two questions. Number one, is this act of relations required? The answer seems to be yes. And does this indicate to me that an onain is able to have relations? The answer is no. first of all, special dispensation in this case, and second, they're not really owning him. Okay.
Rabbi Teacher, why is he not owning him?
So, because the onein in general, the status of an onein is that somebody is supposed to be dedicated to preparing for the funeral, and they're distracted from everything else, and they're not obligated in other mitzvahs. But here, they're not allowed to do the burial yet. The burial is pushed off. So that seems to be why. Okay. So that brings us back to the Gemara, unless there were questions and comments on that. Nope. Okay. So I am going to share the screen with the Gemara. Just a second, move that over there. Okay. We are on Dalet Amud Aleph 4a, and specifically we are the third line, V'chol Osen Hayamin. So we have already established that they're going to have 7 days of Sheva Brachos, followed by 7 days of Avelos of mourning. And then it says, V'chol Osen Hayamim, all through that period of time, Hu Yash, meaning these 2 weeks, Hu Yashen Bein Ha'anashim, V'yishena Bein Hanashim, he sleeps among the men, and she sleeps among the women. For that period of 2 weeks, they have to sleep apart. And the idea is that there's no yichud for them with each other because we are concerned that they might have relations with each other. Now you might ask, well, that's only an issue during Sheva. Why is that an issue during Sheva Brachos? So, first of all, keep in mind the way that we practice the laws of Nida, where we assume automatically, even if there was no visible bleeding, we assume she's a Nida. When they're together for the first time, none of this is a discussion because they're usher to each other anyway. However, take a look at Rashi, Hu Yashen, the Rashi that I'm pointing to here on the third line. Ve'ein misyachdin zem ze, they can't be alone together. Shema yivol, lest they have relations. The avel aser b'tashmish hamita, and an avel is not allowed to have relations. Kid the alfinim be'elu megalchim, like the Gemara in Moikadon says. The af b'shivas yimei hamishta, Shehein Keregel, and even during Sheva Brachos, which has Yom Tov status, Noeg Hu Avelu Shal Divrei Tzina. Nonetheless, they still have the laws of private mourning, Dahainu Iser Tashmish, which is the prohibition against having relations. So therefore, all 2 weeks, they're going to have to sleep apart. That's the rule. Okay. So, in hang on 1 second. I have to send a message to the waiting room. There are people who are trying to come in, but they don't realize this is a Gemara Shiur before the 8 o'clock program. Okay. So that's the statement, is that they have to be apart for these 2 weeks, and Ve'ein monin tachshitin min hakala kol shloshim yom. The kala, the bride, gets to wear tachshitin, gets to wear jewelry all 30 days. Now, there are a couple of things that we need to clarify in this regard. Let me take the easier one first. What 30 days are we talking about? When you say that you don't keep her from wearing ornaments all 30 days, what are the 30 days?
Shloshim.
The 30 days of Shloshim. So take a look at Rashi, who agrees with Chuck. Kol Shloshim Yom, ve'av alpi shehein yemei avelus. Even though those are days of mourning l'sh'ar b'nei Adam for others, ve'kol shkein b'shloshim ve'elich. So she's allowed to have jewelry within her Shloshim. She's certainly allowed to have jewelry after the Shloshim. And the idea is that she's starting out on her married life, and we don't want a situation in which, in any way, shape, or form, the husband says, you know, every time that I saw her beforehand, she was all dressed up, and now I see that she doesn't always look that way, and he loses his attraction to her. You might say, well, he should grow up a little bit, in a chanami. Nonetheless, they enable her to have this. However, the Magen Avraham says no. The Magen Avraham says that's not what this means. This isn't about the 30 days of Shloshim. Rather, what it's saying is, within 30 days after the chuppah, a kala has the status of being a kala and she's allowed to wear jewelry. And the reason why the Magen Avraham's statement is so important is because he deals with the question of what about if Yom Kippur falls out during the 30 days after her wedding, is she allowed to be lenient regarding some of the inuyim, some of the restrictions, because, again, of concern for how she'll appear to her husband. He says what this Gemara is saying is, we don't keep ornaments from a kala all through the 30 days after the wedding. It's not a statement about the shloshim of Avelis. That's the way the Magen Avraham takes it. You can actually see the reference to the Magen Avraham here on the page. You see the little circle next to Kol? Kol Shloshim Yom? So that circle takes you down to the Gilyon Hashas, which is Rabbi Akiva Eger, right below the airplane, in the towards the bottom, where I'm showing you here. The so Rashi Dimar Maskel Kol Shloshim Yom, Ayin Magen Avraham, see the Magen Avraham, Simen Taf Reishud Gimel, Sif Katan Yud Beis. So that's how you know to look in the Magen Avraham. Rabbi Akiva Eger tips you off for it. Okay. So that's... Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. According to the first opinion, would that imply that normally if a woman is in Shloshim, that she can't wear jewelry during Shloshim?
Right. So there's some discussion as to what exactly is covered within this, but the broad answer would seem to be that Rashi thinks so, yes. Yeah, I'm not getting into the Lamaisa implementation of it, but that seems to be what Rashi is saying, yes. So, go back though to the previous point. We said they're gonna sleep apart, right? He's with the men, she's with the women. So the tour asks a question regarding this, and I'm gonna call up the source sheet. Usually I set it up in advance, but this time I forgot to, so it'll take me a moment just to, get that up on my page, and then I will be able to share it with you. Okay, and sharing it. Okay. So the tour notes a debate. When we say that he sleeps with the men and she sleeps with the women, what it seems to be saying is that actually the you need two guards. You need guards for him and guards for her. So he says, "V'kasav ha-raivad." He quotes the raivad to say, "Detravayhu davka." You need both. Sheyu anashim yishenim emachasan v'nashim emakala. He's got to be with the men, she's got to be with the women. If you only have one set of guards, so to speak, if only one of them is guarded, there might be problems. So he's strict in that regard. And then he says, "V'davka balayla," but only at night. "Avo bayom mutter lehisyachid ima kemo sha'ar nashim, ikom sha'ar nashim." But during the day, it's fine. He could be alone with her. Ve'eno aser ela betashmish amita. He's only prohibited in relations with her. Abel b'mine precious, but all other manner of separation. Kimizigas hakos, like for her to pour him a cup of wine. Va'atzas hamita, or for her to make his bed. Va'achatzas panav yadav haraglav, even for her to wash his face and his hands for him. All of these things, mutter. We have no problem with them doing those things by day. They can hug each other, they can kiss each other. The Ravid says that's no problem at all. So in one sense, he's strict. He says at night, you need guards for both of them. And on the other hand, he's radically lenient by day. And he says, when the Gemara says they have to sleep apart at night, only at night. Night is the only concern. That's the Raifid. And then he quotes his father, the Rush, who says, no, you got it backwards. Va'adoni avi harash zal kasav. My father, the Rush, said, harbei hiflig hachacham lahachmir balayla lahatzrich shtei mishmaros. He says, this chacham, the Raifid, went way too far at night, saying that you need to have two shifts, two sets of guards. V'hiflig lahakel bayom, lahatir yichud chibuk v'nishuk. And on the other hand, he went too far being lenient by day, saying they can hug and kiss each other. V'ibcha mistabra, he says, I think it's the opposite. Kilamaris ha'ayin hayetzer misgaber. He says, when you can see somebody, yayetzer hara grows. Hilkach yichud aser bayom kemo balayla. Therefore, yichud is prohibited during the day, just like it is during the night. Avo b'mine precious, but as far as other types of separation, ein sarach laharchik, you don't need to do other separations, but yichud is prohibited during the day as well. Ve'ein od sarach shtei mishmaros elahu bein ha'anashim, ohi bein ha'anashim. But you don't need two sets of guards. Either he should be with men or she should be with women, and that will already be sufficient. You don't have to be that strict. You follow? Really, this is a fascinating psychological question. Right? When you think about it. It's a fascinating question, right? When is the Yetzer Hara stronger? Right? One of them is making the argument that the Yetzer Hara is stronger at night, and therefore that's when I have concerns. And during the day, it's not an issue at all. And the other one says, no, there's a greater concern when you can see each other. You follow? It's a very interesting, at least to me it's an interesting debate anyway. David writes, it could be that he needs to be strict by night because he is so lenient by day. Maybe. You can make the argument. You can make that argument. That happens in other areas of halacha, certainly, where we're worried once we're lenient in certain ways, then we worry that it's going to create further leniency. But the upshot of all of this in our Gemara is that when we said that the wedding isn't supposed to be on Monday, however, if it happens on Monday, that's okay. It's talking about this terrible case. That's the idea. Someone wrote to me privately in the chat, and what woman washes her husband's feet? He is a loser. So we'll have to talk about this more because it's actually going to come up in the Gemara further down the page. But yes, that's an interesting editorial comment for which I thank you. Okay. So that's the Gemara statement. Now, my problem with this read in the Gemara is the same problem I mentioned last week, which is, in that case, it's not about Monday. The same thing will hold true for Sunday, right? We would do the exact same thing. It's not clear that this is Monday specific. Nonetheless, that's the way that the Gemara frames it. And the Gemara now is going to spend the next while talking about this case and this issue with tangents from the Braisa talking about what happens in that case. Clear? We're good? Okay. So I'm going to go back to sharing the Gemara and we're going to go further. The Gemara now says, it's where you see the green word on the fifth line. V'davka aviv shel chasan o ima shel kala, deleka inish detarach lehu. The only case in which they will say, let them sleep together and have the week of Sheva Brachos rather than lose the wedding meal is specifically if we're talking about where it's a parent who they lost. The chasan lost his father, the kala lost her mother, that's where we talk about this. Aval ipcha, I'm sorry, not just where it's a parent, but where it's that parent. Aval ipcha lo, but not if it's the reverse. Apparently these were the parents who would actually work on the wedding. So now there's nobody to help them out in getting them ready. The bride's father apparently is useless. The ditto for the chasan's mother. So then we don't then we would not say move things up. Aval ipcholo. Amar Rafram Bar Papa. Rafram Bar Papa then says, Amar Rav Chista, quoting Rav Chista, I will give you another limitation. Lo shanu ela shanasan mayim al gabe basar. This is only talking about where they added water to the meat already. Now, I don't know exactly why you are adding water to the meat. This isn't a washing thing. This is not a soaking and salting thing either. it's some kind of processing that they did before cooking it for the wedding. Maybe it means putting it in the pot to boil it. I don't know. But the point is that they at some point would expose the meat to water. And once you did that, you can't sell it off to anybody else. So he says, if they already put the water on the meat, that's when we'll say, better do the chuppah now, better move ahead with the week of Sheva Brachos now, or else it's a total loss. However, if they didn't reach that point, then just sell it off to somebody else. You won't take a hit. You sell it to someone else. To which now the Gemara says, well, wait, you can't give a blanket rule like that. It depends, right? It depends on what the market is like. So Amar Rava ubekrach avo pishanas in mayim agabe baser mizdabein. Rava says if you're dealing with a krach is a big city. So you have a lot of people in the city, you have a big market, so you'll be able to find someone to buy it even if the meat has already been exposed to water. Even if the meat's going to go bad soon, you'll find people to buy it in time. So if you're dealing with a city, that restriction doesn't apply, which Rav Chisda gave. Rav Chisda said it's not about the restriction, it's about the expansion. In other words, what Rav Chisda was saying, what we quoted Rav Chisda as saying was that in the event that that water has been placed on the meat, that's when you're allowed to go ahead with the chuppah and all of that, but otherwise not. And Rava is saying, well, if the issue is marketability of the meat and suffering a loss, then you shouldn't be allowed to rush the wedding if you're dealing in a city. Because in a city, you can always find takers. You can find people who will buy the food. Therefore, there's no loss. Amar Rav Papa, on the other hand, Rav Papa says, I'll give you the opposite. He says, ubekfar, if you're dealing with a village, ava pisha lo nasan mayim agabe baster lo mizdabein. Then, even if they did not put water on the meat, nonetheless, you won't be able to sell it off. In other words, you don't have enough of a market to be able to sell off an entire wedding feast in a small town. So therefore, he says, then your distinction is entirely lost. So I'm going to stop the share just for a second to make sure that we're clear on this, especially because a couple of people just joined, and I want to make sure that we're clear. What we're saying is, we established that in the event that the chassan and the kala, one of them loses a parent, right? The chassan loses his father, the kala loses her mother. That's when we tell them to go ahead with the wedding, because otherwise they're going to lose the wedding meal and they're going to be out of luck. So now we are restricting that statement. And what we're saying is that's not necessarily true. In the event that you're talking about a large city, then you could always sell off the wedding meal. In which case, you're not justified in rushing the wedding this way. Go through the normal pattern of Shiva first. Then the Gemara says, on the other hand, if you're dealing in a small town, then none of this applies either. Because if you're dealing it always applies. If you're dealing in a small town, you're never going to be able to recoup the loss. And therefore, there's no thought of being able to say whether the meat, whether it was exposed to water, wasn't exposed to water, isn't even going to matter. That's the other way. So going back now to the Gemara, we now have a question, which is, so why did you bother giving me the distinction about the meat being exposed to water or not being exposed to water? In a big city, I can always sell it off, whether the meat was exposed to water or not. In a small town, I can never sell it off, whether the meat was exposed to water or not. So what is Rav Chisda's distinction about? So the Ela de Rav Chisda Hechi Mishkach Hasla, where the arrow is. So where is this statement of Rav Chisda applicable? Amar Rav Ashi Kigon Masa Machsia. Rav Ashi says, a town like Masa Machsia, which happens to be, I think, where he lived. De Mafka Mikrach Umafka Mikfar. It's not a big city. And it's not a small town either. So that's where you'll see that in the event that the meat is marketable, then we say don't rush the chuppah. If the meat is not marketable, it's already been prepared for the meal, then you're going to rush it. And then we'll do very quickly a brisa that supports Rav Chisda. Tanya kavatze der chista hareshaya pito afuya. If the bread was baked, v'tibcho tavuach, the meat was already shechted, v'yeno mazug, the wine is already diluted for the meal. V'nasan mayim agabe basar, and they put water on it, on the meat, so now the meat can't really be sold well, at least not in a town with a, you know, that doesn't have a big market. Umeis avishal chasa, now ima shal kala, the guy loses his father, the bride loses her mother. Machnizin es hameis l'cheder, v'sal chasa, v'sal kala l'chupa, ubo mi'ilas mitzvah uporesh. Then they go ahead with the chupa first, they have bia, as we talked about, and then Uparesh, then they separate, v'noeg shivas yimei amishta, they go through the week of Sheva brachos, v'achar kach noeg shivas yimei avelus, and then you have the 7 days of Shiva, v'chol osen hayamim hu yashin bein hu anashim, v'ishto yashena bein hanashim, and all through that time, he is going to be among the men, she's going to be among the women. So far, this brisa says nothing new. It only supports Rav Chisda's distinction about the marketability of the meat. However, the brisa then concludes with a new thought, with something that we have not seen before, and that's going to be of great interest to the Gemara. V'chein mi shapirsa ishto nida. And so too, in the event that she becomes a nida. Not the case of avelus, not the case of bereavement, but rather the case of the guy and the girl go to the chuppah, and she becomes a nida before they can consummate the marriage. Hu yashen bein ha'anashim, v'hi yashena bein hanashim. So once again, they're going to have to sleep separately. That's what's going to happen. So that's an added note which we did not know before, which we're going to have to revisit. And then, the last note in the Braisa, v'ein monin tachshitin min ha'kala kol shloshim yom, we don't keep the kala from having her jewelry all 30 days. Again, as we said before, Rashi says the 30 days means 30 days of shloshim from the avelos, whereas Magen Avraham says, no, it means 30 days from the wedding. Benkach ubenkach lo yivol lo be'erev Shabbos v'lo b'motzai Shabbos. The conclusion of the Braisa says that their initial bia, initial relations for any married couple, should not be on Friday night and should not be on Saturday night either. That concludes the Braisa. So obviously we are going to need to talk about this, and that's something that we're going to come back to obviously in future weeks. But what this Braisa has established is it's not a hard and fast rule that that you're going to rush ahead with the wedding and that they'll consummate the marriage and then have the week of Sheva Brachos. It's all based on loss of the meal. If the meal will not be lost, then we say do the Shiva first. Do the burial, do the Shiva. The only reason to move up the marriage in this way is in the event that there's a fear of losing the investment in the wedding meal. Got it? Okay. So there's obviously more to say. God willing, we'll come back to it next week. But I'm going to stop there because at 8 o'clock we have this big panel discussion going on. Hopefully you'll be back. It'll actually be in this room. You can